Okay, well, welcome to session 3429. This is Best Practices in Leadership Development Around the World. And this is a president-elect session, so it's the choice, the topic, and the speakers are the choice of the moderator and the president-elect. That's me. My name is Joyce Goffin. And as you can imagine, I might be kind of interested in the topic of leadership. And since I don't have anyone to introduce me briefly, I will tell you that I am a retired consultant, formerly worked for the Utah Department of Health for 31 years. I did mostly workforce and development training. The day that I retired, I started my next job as executive director of the Great Basin Public Health Leadership Institute, and I worked there for exactly 8 years. And on my last day as Great Basin executive director, I got a call and they asked me to run for president-elect of APHA. I said, "Did you know I'm retiring?" And they said, "No, but now you'll have enough time." And that becomes really critical when you realize that this year I'm going to put in almost 85,000 miles in airplanes, and next year it will probably be even more. I've already been to 7 state affiliates. I've been to India this year, and I'm going to Taiwan in a few weeks. And I have at least 20 other state affiliates lined up for next year, and I hear there are more that are going to have requests high on. So I am really excited to be in this position and excited to serve both APHA and the affiliate organizations. As I put together the topic this year, the first thing I did was to contact people that I knew in the leadership development business. And a large part of how we keep our contacts together is through the National Public Health Leadership Development Network. And our founding members, Dr. Lewis Rowitz and Dr. Kate Wright, are here today in the audience. So we're very pleased to have you as part of this session today. What I'm going to do is tell you that the individuals of this session have all declared that they have no commercial conflict of interest for the session. And that I'm going to do a real quick overview, give you a little bit of background about leadership. Then we'll go to our individual presentations, and they'll be in the order that they are in your books. After that, we'll have a very open panel discussion, encouraging our panelists to ask questions, do summaries, and draw some conclusions from what they've heard. And then we'd like to reserve quite a bit of time for audience questions and answers. We think that's a robust part of our learning exchange today. The topic of creating global health equity requires that we consider everything that's required to achieve this kind of a goal. I like this quote from U.S. President John F. Kennedy: "Our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's future. And we are all mortal." So often in public health, we talk about the things that differentiate us. And this is something that draws us together. In order to achieve this, we need to have leaders not only here in the U.S., but around the globe. Years ago, the Institute of Medicine report on the future of public health said the need for leadership is too great to leave its emergence to chance. And as I show the pictures of these individuals, would you say that these leaders make a difference? Leadership definitely makes a difference, and it took me a long time to find out how to talk to people about what that exactly means. Leadership is too important to leave its emergence to chance. How many of you have ever worked for a really bad leader? Yeah, okay, and you're honest about it, and that person's not sitting next to you. But when I've done my leadership institutes and I've said, you know, how many of you have worked for a person, you said, how did that person ever get into a leadership position? And it's sometimes because they're the most technically accurate person, they've been there the longest, they have the most credentials, and a lot of times it's like, did anybody ever talk to them about what their leadership skills were as they moved into a position? In fact, I've had leaders come and tell me that they really liked being the supervisor, the director, whatever the title might be. They liked everything about it except the people. I don't get it either. So in order to meet this global challenge of the 21st century, we must prepare this group of leaders. And this group of leaders will look different, and we hope that they will look like all of the people that we serve. And the people who are on the panel today are people who are helping to do this. Throughout our presentations, we're going to do a little bit of a reflection on the past, the present, and we're really going to try to focus on our future. One of the things I like, one of the favorite quotes I use in leadership training is from Peter Drucker, who says, if you want to predict, the best way to predict the future is to create it. So we want to talk about how we create this future for leadership training. So we're going to hear, some of our presenters will talk a little bit about a brief summary of some of the early programs and how we've developed networks for leadership. We're going to talk about common competency frameworks that we've used. What are the core elements that we include in our leadership programs and where did they come from? We'll talk about the importance of using effective program evaluation, which is almost always qualitative. We're going to talk about partnerships between academic programs, the public sector, nonprofit organizations, other entities, including for-profit environments. We're going to talk about the best practices and the examples we think work really well. Then we're going to talk about the things where we really have opportunities for improvement. I'm a quality improvement person from way back, and so I always think in terms of, you know, you're, even if you get to 99.9%, you still got room to grow. So we're going to try to keep the forum very open and encourage an exchange of information. Now what I'll do is I'm going to do a very brief presentation, and then I'm going to turn the time over to each person. I'll give you a brief introduction and let them tell you more about themselves and how it applies to their leadership. As we go through this, we'll try to keep ourselves on time so that we have that time at the end. Now, if we seem to be doing well, we might be able to take a question at the end of each one of these sessions, but if you're thinking of something, I would say jot it down so that you don't forget. And let's look for the areas where we can find some synthesis and really find some synergy in connecting the dots from around the globe. These are the topics that we're going to go through today, and as I said, they should be in your books. So we'll first talk about my experience this year in India, and then Dr. Ed Baker is going to talk about some of the national leadership development programs. We're going to move to the Caribbean. We can all pretend we're on a Caribbean cruise. With Dr. Bain, we're going to talk about an interesting program that's a very specific disciplinary program that's being done internationally with Ralph Timpari, and then Dr. Rudy is going to talk about a path to wise leadership in global health where they actually have people all over the world. So, are we ready? Would everyone please tighten their seat belts? I'll do a demonstration shortly. Be sure that if you run out of oxygen, you assist yourself first and then help others around you. I can pretty much recite that in its entirety right now. So I want to talk a little bit about my experience this year doing a workshop for academics and practitioners in Punjab State in India. This was a partnership between the University of Utah and their graduate programs in public health and the Postgraduate Institute of Medical Education and Research, which I refer to as PGI, in Chandigarh, India. And people who were instrumental in helping me formulate the ideas for the workshop and extended the invitation to me to participate include Sharon Talboy. Sharon, are you here yet? I know she's going to come at some point. Who is my mentee and who is now a PhD candidate and doing some of her doctoral research in India. And another partner from our National Public Health Leadership Development Network and someone I went to her program many years ago before we started ours, Dr. Kathy Kennedy, who is the director of the Regional Institute for Health and Environmental Leadership in Denver, Colorado. So I put a shout out to my friends and said, I'm going to India. Does anyone want to come along? And Kathy was the first person to raise her hand. This is an interesting partnership, and what it focuses on is bringing together graduate students from the University of Utah in Salt Lake City with graduate students from PGI in Chandigarh. And they've paired these students up to work on three different kinds of projects, largely in rural, I mean very rural communities outside of Basipathana, which is about an hour outside of Chandigarh. And this picture, the pictures here, the lady in the upper right-hand corner was dying to have me take a picture of her and her baby. As you can see, she's sitting in front of a rather old sewing machine, and I have a picture of the sewing machine. So this is at a Sikh temple in one of these small communities. It's a community center. They have a community wash basin out in the front. And it's very, very rural. And so the women are learning how to sew on one side And then on the other side, in this lower right-hand corner, you can see our students, a couple of our students, using learning tools to teach people how to do individual sanitation, water sanitation systems at their homes, teaching them how to crush chlorine tablets, how to test for the appropriate levels of chlorine, and they have translators from the community to help with this educational purpose. I was there in monsoon season, and so it was a very rainy and warm day. But this is very typical for the regions where they work. The other two student projects, besides this one, was a student project to work with the Agawande Centers, which are sort of like a Head Start program for very poor children in India. And the other students were working on collecting data for Sharon's dissertation on aspects of violence prevention against women in India, and they were doing intake work with young women in the community. Again, I was director of the Great Basin Public Health Leadership Institute, which was a Utah-Nevada partnership. In the time that I was there, we trained over 250 individuals in a very comprehensive year-long program. What we did is we took some of the material from that program and we plugged it in, along with Kathy's program, we plugged that into our mix for the leadership seminar in Chandigarh. So we did try to do a quick assessment, and Sharon was very instrumental in helping us with that, because truly, they had not done any comprehensive workforce assessments in this area. They were gracious and scheduled 2 full days at an academic institution to get 2 full days to do a leadership workshop was truly significant for us. We had a mix of academic faculty members, students from both Utah and from their program, and we had local practitioners, nonprofit leaders. They actually invited people from all around the country, and we had people from other states in India that came along. And it was they had a waiting list almost as long as the list of the individuals who came. We had about 42 people in the class. And we settled on core concepts that we feel are absolutely critical for leadership development, including systems thinking, the importance of a shared vision, collaborative leadership, and teamwork. And it turned out that that's about as much as you can squeeze into 2 days in a reliable fashion. We used adult learning principles, so we had role plays, we had video, written activities. We did a lot of experiential stuff, and they were frequently in very small groups, and they were mixed up. We made sure that they were always mixed up so that they were getting the very best of having this mix of students and leaders. We tried to pick material that we thought would be culturally appropriate for the group. We knew that they're highly educated. They're all quite fluent in English, so that wasn't such a problem for us. We did not need to use translators at this time. But we found a few little glitches here and there. And we did open-ended evaluation at the end of each day. You can see this was our classroom setup, and as I said, it was the middle of the monsoon season. It was about 105 outside and about 95% humidity, so we were very grateful that they had a room that had air conditioning. And typical of a lot of university settings, it was not the very finest in educational environment, but it was quite adequate for our needs, and they assisted us both in preparing for these workshops and for sponsoring and taking care of things while we were there. So it was fairly comfortable for most of the people. In the upper right-hand corner, these are many of their faculty members from the school, and they would sort of take turns sitting in at the back of the room. Right here, we actually had them engaged in all of the exercises that we were doing. We received really strong support from their academic and community leaders, Dr. Rajesh Kumar, who's the dean of their School of Public Health, and Dr. Ravinda Kaiwal were very instrumental in helping us. Dr. Mami Kaur is the advisor for Sharon, one of the advisors for Sharon's dissertation, and Dr. T.P. Singh, who had graduated from the MPH program at the U of U, was a key conduit in bringing these schools together. They had all of the leadership attend our kickoff on that first day, and then Dr. Kumar stayed for most of the time And so this was really important because when we talk about walking the talk in leadership, it made a big difference to the academic faculty members to see that their leaders were there and engaged and involved in the process. Even the president, if you will, of PGI, Dr. Chawla, came for that big opening kickoff. And if you know anything about India, they're quite formal and they make quite a production out of everything. And so it was really important to have him there at that time. They did an appropriate celebration and acknowledgement, made quite a deal of the fact that these people had gone through the program, and they promised that there would be support for future endeavors and continuing this effort. I hope that includes a more comprehensive assessment for their needs. And they had many announcements and stories in their local press daily before we got there and while we were there about the workshop and what the things that were going on. And I had some of those, but the copies weren't very good. I did not include them, but I couldn't read the ones in Hindi anyway, so... Maybe someone could translate for us. We ask a question, what was something you learned today that was important or useful to you? And essentially they talked about the value of learning new ways of thinking by being around people from different cultures. That this was interesting, challenges and problems are basically the same in every community. And in India, the challenges are certainly very great. They have many difficult challenges. But we have challenges as well. What I was surprised to find out is that this group of people thought that the U.S. was so far along that we had pretty much achieved and accomplished all of the problems that they could possibly ever face. And our students and the rest of us let them know, oh, no, we are not anywhere near there. We talked a lot about the importance of having a vision for whatever endeavor you're engaged in. And then the importance is sharing that vision with other people. And as they did the exercises and they shared their goals and their visions, and especially like for these young students, they said, this was wonderful because we were starting to see things in ourselves that we weren't sure we should value or might not be valued by someone, and we got that kind of value. A vision's no good unless it's shared. That relationships are the most important factor in achieving systems improvement. And this was probably a real lightning rod. Never forget the importance of community participation in decision making, or as my friend Dr. Barry Levy likes to say, putting the public back in public health. This is a shot of some of the experiential things we did. This was a team building exercise that Kathy prepared. It's called the Tower Builder, and they make towers out of sugar cubes. And they have many challenges, including the person who's building the tower wears a blindfold. This was just killer for them because they don't usually have this kind of training. We ask again, what if any U.S. concepts did not fit naturally in Chandigarh? So we were just trying to find out, you know, so how do we make it more culturally appropriate? They said, you know, India is a multicultural area, so concepts seem to fit in well for most people. However, there was some that did not translate as well. They're a very hierarchical, not only organizational structure, but the entirety of India is based on hierarchy. And who you are is very dependent on the title that you have. And so I introduced concepts around systems thinking and social systems from Dr. Barry Oshry in terms of tops, middles, and bottoms of an organization and the kinds of roles they play, and that you could be a top, a middle, or a bottom. And they really, really struggled with that concept because they felt like the tops never, ever listened to the things they have to say, and I could have said the same thing for most of the training we do in the U.S. So that was really interesting. There were some words that some people didn't know too well, and as they were doing exercises, they were a little bit challenged. And so, you know, we would encourage them in the future to make sure, if you don't understand any terminology, please let us know. But we had told them during this exercise, please don't talk to anyone else as you're doing the exercise. So they felt really held back. We learned a few things. We found out there were some interesting things about time sensitivity. We usually try to be prompt and start, you know, I say Utah's norm in time is always 10 minutes late. In Utah, you're always 10 minutes late. And they were much later than that sometimes. So it was very interesting. And then it was interesting to have the training in a mixed environment where you had so many different people. And we thought that had quite a bit of value, but it did make it a little more challenging. What worked well, I think one of the things we noticed right off the bat was that the students found out that they could apply the concepts to their programs in the field immediately. And what they found out is that when you come in as a do-gooder public health person and you know exactly what people need and you're ready to give it to them, they may not have wanted that in the very first place. And it seems like we have to learn this lesson over and over and over again. But that was something that they noticed. And once they figured it out, then they figured out how to get a workaround for that. On the left-hand side, you can see me and Sharon and then our six U.S. students. And you'll notice that they're all wearing their Indian clothing. And on our last day when we were together, we looked around the room and we thought it was rather funny because all of our students were dressed in Indian garb and all of the Indian students were wearing Levi's and looked like they just walked out of New York. So it was, there was really a cultural exchange that had taken place. Again, we're trying to ensure that we look at things like the difference in terms and definitions. There was a recommendation it might be good to co-facilitate with someone from that country, and I would recommend that if you have someone who has the expertise and you can take care of that in advance. The importance of having a comfortable place for training. The room was great, but we had lunch downstairs and it was like a boiling pot down there, so that was a little bit difficult. We need to do, again, better assessment. We need to do more comprehensive evaluation. We need to ensure that there are follow-up opportunities. And I'm going to use a phrase that was coined by Dr. Rowitz over there. We need to promote an ecological model for leadership development that essentially says that you may know what you know now and it may suit you well, but at some point in time in your career, you may have to learn something new and do it a different way. And that is not dependent on your age. This was my first international experience, and I celebrated my 40th year in public health when I was in India on August 1st. And I'm one of those gray hairs now. So if you can learn these things after six decades, you have a chance to continue learning, and we highly encourage that. So that is my presentation.